हरिः ॐ सहनववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमाविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 70. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Bhakti, the friendly kings of the Kurus and Pandavas were represented by Bhishma, Dhritarashtra, the five Pandava brothers, King Drupada, King Santardana, and Rukmini's father, Bhishmaka. Because of Krishna's kidnapping Rukmini, there was initially some misunderstanding between the two families. But Bhishmaka, king of Vidarbha, being approached by Sri Balarama and persuaded by many saintly persons, was induced to participate in the marriage ceremony of Krishna and Rukmini. Although the incident of the kidnapping was not a very happy occurrence in the kingdom of Vidarbha, kidnapping was not an unusual affair among Kshatriyas. Kidnapping was, in fact, current in almost all their marriages. Anyway, King Bhishmaka was from the very beginning inclined to hand over his beautiful daughter to Krishna. In one way or another, his purpose had been served, and so he was pleased to join the marriage ceremony, even though his eldest son was degraded in the fight. It is mentioned in the Padma Purana that Maharaj Nanda and the coward boys of Vrindavan joined the marriage ceremony. Kings from the kingdoms of Kuru, Srinjaya, Kekaya, Vidarbha, and Kunti all came to Dwarka on this occasion and met with one another very joyfully. So even Nanda and the cowherd boys came. Because he was inclined, but the whole thing didn't go down very well, and then his eldest son, he also then got degraded in the process, so it didn't work out so well. So generally, you know how you say, your daughter goes, but then your son's there, and then he gets married, then, you know, a daughter comes. So you never technically lose daughters. But there he lost the daughter and the son, so it didn't quite work out so good. Srila Sukadeva Goswami concluded, the kings and their daughters were totally astonished to hear the story of Rukmini's abduction, which was being glorified in song everywhere. Dwarka's citizens were overjoyed to see Krishna, the lord of all opulence, united with Rukmini, the goddess of fortune. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book, the story of Rukmini's being kidnapped by Krishna was poeticized, and professional readers recited it everywhere. All the assembled kings and their daughters especially were struck, and their daughters especially, were struck with wonder and very much pleased upon hearing the chivalrous activities of Krishna. In this way, all the visitors, as well as the inhabitants of Dwarka City, were joyful to see Krishna and Rukmini together. In other words, the goddess of fortune was now united with the Supreme Lord, the maintainer of everyone, and thus all the people felt extremely jubilant. Conclusion. The spirit soul is of the same pure quality in any embodiment of matter. Those who are not sufficiently intelligent see only the bodily differences between animals and men, literates and illiterates, rich and poor, which cover the pure spirit soul. Such differences observed merely on the basis of the body are exactly like the differences between fires in terms of the various types of fuel they consume. Right? Because fire is one thing, but depending upon the fuel it consumes, it may have different colors or different forms like this. Whatever the size and shape of the fuel, there is no such variety of size and shape in the fire which comes out. Similarly, in the sky, there are no differences in size or shape. Right? Sky is the sky. Yeah. Chapter 5, The History of Prajumna, Pratigya. Whoever is protected by Krishna, no one can kill, and whoever is destined to be killed by Krishna, no one can protect. Chapter 55, Summarize the Questions and Answers. Srimati Rukmini Devi asked herself question 10, 26, and 27 of Srimad Bhagavatam. So from 10:55:31, who is this lotus-eyed jewel among men? What man's son is he, and what woman carried him in her womb? And who is this woman he has taken as his wife? And then from 10:55:33, but how is it that this young man is so much resembles my own Lord Krishna, the wielder of Sharanga, in his bodily form, and his limbs, in his gait, and the tone of his voice, and in his smiling glance? Narad Muni answers the above questions in verse 36. The rhetorical questions uttered in verse 40 do not come under this study. Adhyaya Prakashika. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out, Prajumna was born before Krishna's marriages to Jambavati and other queens. Then the marriages took place, and after that Prajumna returned home. However, here, along with describing the birth of Prajumna, his whole story is related for the purpose of continuity. Because when you're discussing, you're telling a story and all that, so you just go through it, how it naturally goes to explain the story. So it's not about actually the time, you know, the continuity of the time. It's the continuity of the story. So since we're talking about Prajumna, then he goes into that, goes through the whole time. Then he may go back and then tell other stories. Right, so sometimes there's a complaint that if the Puranas are historical, then why is it there's no chronology of time? But the point is it's chronology of story. Because when you just go by the time, you never get a clear understanding. It's just like in modern history, when you study that, you never actually understand what's going on, because it's just about the time, this happened here, then that's there, and all these different things. But the Vedic is that it just goes through one thing, then it goes back and then does something else. Then you may be able to compare them. This chapter tells how Prajumna was born as the son of Lord Krishna, and then kidnapped by the demon Shambhara. It also describes how Prajumna killed Shambhara and returned home with a wife. Kamadev, Cupid, an expansion of Lord Vasudev, had been burned to ashes by Lord Shiva's anger and was reborn as part and parcel of Prajumna from the womb of Rukmini. A demon named Shambhara, thinking Prajumna his enemy, kidnapped him from the maternity room even before he was 10 days old. Shambhara threw Prajumna into the ocean and returned to his kingdom. A powerful fish swallowed Prajumna and was caught by fishermen in a net. They presented the huge fish to Shambhara, and when his cooks cut it open, they found a child within its belly. The cooks gave the infant to the maidservant Mayavati, who was astonished to see him. Just then Narad Muni appeared and told her who the infant was. Mayavati was actually Kamadev's wife, Rati Devi. While waiting for her husband to be reborn in a new body, she had taken employment as a cook in the household of Shambhara. Now that she understood who the infant was, she began to feel intense affection for him. After a very short time, Prajumna grew to youthful maturity, and entrancing all the women with his beauty. Once Rati Devi approached Prajumna and playfully moved her eyebrows in a conjugal mood. Addressing her as mother, Prajumna commented that she was putting aside her proper maternal mood and behaving like a passionate girlfriend. Rati then told Prajumna who they both were. She advised him to kill Shambhara, and to help him, she instructed him in the mystic mantras known as Mahamaya. Prajumna went to Shambhara and, after angering him with various insults, challenged him to fight, upon which Shambhara angrily took up his club and marched outside. The demon tried various magic spells against Prajumna, but Prajumna fended off all of them with the Mahamaya mantras, and then beheaded Shambhara with his sword. At that moment, Rati Devi appeared in the sky and took Prajumna away to Dwarka. When Prajumna and his wife entered the inner chambers of Lord Krishna's palace, the many beautiful ladies there thought he was Krishna himself. So much did his appearance and dress resemble the Lord's. Out of shyness, the ladies ran here and there to hide themselves. But after a little while, they noticed small differences in Prajumna's and Krishna's appearances. And once they understood he was not Lord Krishna, they gathered around him. When Rukmini Devi saw Prajumna, she felt overwhelmed with motherly love, and milk began to flow spontaneously from her breasts. Noting that Prajumna looked exactly like Krishna, she became eager to find out who he was. She remembered how one of her sons had been abducted from the maternity room. If he were still alive, she thought, he would be the same age as this Prajumna standing before me. While Rukmini reflected in this way, Lord Krishna arrived in the company of Devaki and Vasudeva. Although the Lord understood the situation perfectly well, he remained silent. Then Narad Muni arrived and explained everything. Everyone is amazed to hear the account and embraced Prajumna in great ecstasy. Because Prajumna's beauty so closely resembled Krishna, the ladies in a maternal relationship with Prajumna could not help thinking of him. The ladies in a maternal relationship with Prajumna could not help thinking of him as their conjugal lover. He was, after all, the exact reflection of Sri Krishna, and therefore was natural for them to see him in this way. Because of their conjugal relationship with Krishna.
The other ladies.
The ladies in a conjugal relationship with Krishna, then Krishna's son would be like their son, so they would have a maternal relationship. Mm-hmm. But because he so exactly resembled Krishna, then seeing him, it would remind them of Krishna and that conjugal relationship that they have with Krishna. So, yeah. And he is Cupid.
He's a bit younger.
They all look 16. Everybody. Yeah. Except for a few, like Ugrasena or others. Then they take on that mood like they're older. But. Shloka Anusharanam, summary of verses. 1 to 15, the past of Prajumna. 16 to 24, Prajumna kills Sambhara. 25 to 40, Prajumna returns to Dwarka. Verses 1 to 15, the past of Prajumna. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, Kamadev, Cupid, and expansion of Vasudeva had previously been burnt to ashes by Rudra's anger. Now to obtain a new body, he merged back into the body of Lord Vasudeva. He took birth in the womb of Vaidarbhi from the seed of Lord Krishna and received the name Prajumna. In no respect was he inferior to his father. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. It is said that Cupid, who is directly part and parcel of Lord Vasudeva, and who was formerly burnt to ashes by the anger of Lord Shiva, took birth in the womb of Rukmini, begotten by Krishna. This is Kamadeva, a demigod of the heavenly planets, especially capable of inducing lusty desires. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has many grades of parts and parcels, but the quadruple expansion of Krishna, Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Prajumna, and Adiruddha, are directly in the Vishnu category. Kama, or the Cupid demigod, who later took his birth from the womb of Rukmini, was also named Prajumna, but he cannot be the Prajumna of the Vishnu category. He belongs to the category of Jiva Tattva. But for exhibiting special power in the category of demigods, he was a part and parcel of the super prowess of Prajumna. That is the verdict of the Goswamis. Right? So he's a Shaktivesh of that. So being Cupid, then he's Prajumna because he has the attractive feature. So that attractive feature of Prajumna, of Vishnu Tattva, then is there in him. And so he can act within that capacity. But as they point out here, then he's Jiva. He's not how you say? The Vishnu Tattva. Otherwise, how would he be goofing with Shiva? And two, why would he be burned to ashes? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, it is seen when the eternal associates of Swayam Bhagavan appear in this world, they take shelter of the fame of their respective expansions, Vibhuti, who actually merge into the original associates at the time of appearance, rather than appear directly, in order that the materialistic men do not raise speculation and in order to protect the confidential nature of bhakti. In the 11th canto, the Lord says, the Vedas tend to speak indirectly. I am fond of this. Yeah, Srimad Bhagavatam 11:21-35. Right, because then using these, some of the ways that it's indirect kind of speaking, like in the poetic forms and that, Krishna likes that, because then with that you can do so many nice things. Unfortunately, materialists also do so many not so nice things like that. But for Krishna, pastimes of Krishna's devotees, then it's very nice. In this way, Drona, his vibhuti, was merged into Nanda and Dara, as and Dara was Jashoda. Vasudeva was Uddhava. Indra was Arjuna. Yamaraj was Vidura. Kartikeya was Samba. Even the Lord himself appears through the celebrity of his amsas, which actually merged within him when he appears. Vaikunthanath came and appeared in Vasudeva's house, and similarly appeared as Vamana and Narayana Rishi, and even as Kirodakshai Vishnu. In this way, Prajumna, who is the third member of the Chaturvyuha, appeared using the fame of his own expansion called Kamadev, who merged into him on his appearance. The Gita explains that Kamadev is the vibhuti, or expansion, of Krishna, Vasudevamsa. Kamadev attained another body by entering into the body of Prajumna. This he attained not by his own powers, but by the will of the Lord, the ocean of variegated pastimes. So then we see is that all these different demigods, when they come down, then they enter into the bodies of the original associates that are there. Because all the original associates of Krishna, it's their expansions that are all the associates in Dwarka and in Vaikuntha and as the demigods. Right, so then when they come in swayam forms, then they come, they merge into the original. But if it's not swayam, then they may come just as they are. Does that make some sense? Doesn't make any sense. Just as when Krishna comes, all the different avatars merge into him, because he's the avatari. Right, so when it comes to associates, then Nanda and Yashoda, then technically their expansions are Vasudeva and Devaki, and then you have coming down, and then you have Dara and Drona and all that kind of thing. So depending on what it is, so in here, because you're having both the pastimes going on, then we see Drona and Dara, then they merge into Jashoda. Is that what you think? Then Prajumna Kamadev is the demigod that has sports the prowess of Prajumna in doing his work as Cupid. Because he's the one, because Prajumna means the attractive feature. Right? And so then Kamadev, that's his business, is creating that attraction. Right? So then when Kamadev comes, then he, to get another body, he merges into Prajumna. Right? But the Kamadev aspect, that's the demigod. Right. Prajumna is the Chaturvyuha. But so if we're referring to him as Kamadev, then we're talking about the Jiva. If we're talking about the Vishnu Tattva, then we're talking about... Is that what I'm saying?
But who, as the son of Krishna, who is he, Jiva Tattva or Chaturvyuha?
By what he's saying here is that we're talking about the Jiva, because he was the one that came, but at the same time is the Chaturvyuha is there.
He's both,
but the aspect of Kamadev is the demigod. So it's not Prajumna, because Prajumna doesn't get involved in that.
It's more clarified in the Sandarbha of Jiva Goswami's
class. Sorry?
Next Jiva Goswami's.
Okay. In this way, Prajumna, who is the third member of the Chaturvyuha, appeared using the fame of his own expansion called Kamadev, who merged into him on his appearance. The Gita explains that Kamadev is the vibhuti, or expansion, of Krishna, Vasudevamsa. Kamadev attained another body by entering into the body of Prajumna. Thus, this he attained not by his own prowess, but by the will of the Lord, the ocean of variegated pastimes. Because it's not under his control. Srila Jiva Goswami comments to verses 1 and 2 in Krishna Sandarbha, Anucheda 87 and 88, called titled Kamadeva. The statement that Prajumna burned by Shiva's glass became material Cupid is a limited proposal. It is said, Yatrasau samstita krishnas tribi shakya samahitaha ramanirudha prajumnyai rukminya sahito vibhu. There in Dwarka, the powerful Lord Krishna resides, situated with excellent pastimes, accompanied by Balaram, Aniruddha, and Prajumna, and by Yashakti, Rukmini, Gopal Tapani Upanishad 2:36. It is impossible for him to be born materially, since it is well known that he is eternally situated within the Chaturvyuha with Krishna, whereas Cupid is not included in the Chaturvyuha, since he is a particular devata. Therefore, it is said, the real Kamadeva, Prajumna, is an expansion of Vasudeva. Cupid had previously been burned to ashes by Rudra's anger. Now to attain a body again, he merged into the body of Prajumna. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:55-1. Though a Brahmana ignorant of the Vedas may exist, a real Brahmana, too, knows the Vedas. The word too indicates the real person. The real Kamadeva is an expansion of Vasudeva. Or the word too indicates a new topic. Stating Vasudeva's amsa is Kamadeva, has the same meaning. He who previously was burnt by Shiva's anger, the material devata, Cupid, in order to take a body, entered Pratyapadyata, Prajumna, the amsa of Vasudeva known as Cupid. Since it was impossible to otherwise attain a body by himself, because of Shiva's eternal curse to be without a body, right? So he couldn't do, so then he has to take shelter of Prajumna. Bhuya indicates that previously he had arisen from Prajumna, or in the verse can mean Vasudeva's amsa, who previously was not burned. Hada Gadha, by Shiva's anger, again entered Vasudeva in order to reveal his form. In order to take a body for again manifesting pastimes in this world, he was not burned since he was Vasudeva's amsa. Right, so he's Vasudeva's amsa, so that aspect is not burned, though the body may have been burned. But the personality, that potency is not burned. What was said is made clear. He took birth in the womb of Vaidarbhi from the seed of Krishna and received the name Prajumna. In no respect was he inferior to his father. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:55-2. He who arose from Krishna's seed and who was named Prajumna, he appeared, born from Vaidarbhi, at the time of Krishna's pastimes on earth. This person was not the material Cupid. The reason is given. He was not inferior, anavamanaha. He was equal to Krishna, his father, in unlimited qualities and in form, sarvataha. If it were otherwise, he could not be said to be equal to Krishna. Though Arjuna is famous as being Nara in Mahabharata, in the story of five Indras, Indra becomes Arjuna. This actually means that Indra entered Arjuna. Narada explained that Cupid had entered Prajumna, and thus attaining him was not a fault. It just means at fault.
No, it was not a fault.
It was not a fault. Yeah. Oh, on Rati's part.
Yeah.
Okay, because she has connection to Cupid,
yes.
Not to Prajumna.
Yeah,
since the previous verse must be explained in terms of the latter verse, by the strength of Narada's explanation, it is understood that the burnt-up material Cupid had entered Prajumna. Rati's qualification for directly contacting Prajumna is like being touched by a touchstone. By contact with him, she developed similar qualities. However, Prajumna's own Shakti, or consort, is Rukmavati. The Gopal Tapani statement agrees with this conclusion about Prajumna.
So what's the conclusion?
The conclusion is that the demigod entered into Prajumna.
And who he became? Jiva Tattva?
Means the Jiva Tattva is merged into the Vishnu Tattva. No, he doesn't become Vishnu Tattva. He's just there.
Because Srila Prabhupada said, He said that he cannot be Prajumna and Vishnu Tattva.
No, the demigod can't be, but the demigod's merged in too. See, is that if you have like the Dasa Avatar, Krishna comes, all the Dasa Avatar are merged in him. But then the point being is that they're all Vishnu Tattva, so then there's not a problem there. But you have, but at the same time, the Shakyavesha avatars are also there, who are Jiva Tattvas. So those same potencies are there. So that potency of Cupid or Kamadev is there with Prajumna. So when he's referred to as Kamadev, you're talking about the demigod.
And if we refer to Prajumna, we talk about...
You're talking about, means you have Prajumna as one of the Chaturvyuha. But then you see in the pastimes he's taking part as Kamadev. So you have both aspects going on. So when it's talking about the Kamadev aspect, that's the Jiva. Because they're both there. Like, because it's an expansion from, so there's no difficulty in that. And because, Narati is then connected with Prajumna, then she has, just as he can merge into Prajumna, then she has that qualification to therefore interact.
So, yeah. And the Rukmavati, which is mentioned as Pradyumna's consort, is Rukmini or someone else?
Prajumna, that's Rukmavati.
Yeah,
that's a difference. It's not Rukmini, that's his mother.
No, in terms of Chaturvyuha, is he?
Well,
Rukmavati is a different.
Different than?
Rati is the first one, Rukmavati is second, but something like that it is.
That I don't know. That we'll see later. But point is Rati is Cupid's wife, and Rukmavati is Prajumna's wife.
And when you say about this particular point that Kamadev, the material Cupid, merges into Pradyumna.
Yeah, so and that's who Rati is connected with.
So then, that means it's Achintabhidavi, that he's acting simultaneously as a material Cupid, plus, as well as he's Pradyumna, this one of the quadruples.
The point is the offices of Cupid are coming from Prajumna.
Yes.
So there's no contradiction there.
Okay.
Is that so?
This Jivatma Kamadev entering into Pradyumna, it is not the same thing that Srila Prabhupada speaks of when he says spiritual annihilation. It's not the same.
No, where's the annihilation?
Yeah, exactly.
Because he's still there.
Yeah.
Because that's where he's originally from.
Yeah. So you can come in and come go out.
It's just like, let's say you have the Prime Minister and then there's so many ministers. It's not that the Prime Minister can't do the work of the minister. It's just that since the minister's there, he's doing that work. You understand? But if that's that position is of the form of that position is removed, so now that position just goes back to the Prime Minister. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, when we're talking about the aspects of Cupid, we're talking about the demigod. Like that, when we're talking about the Chaturvyuha, then we're talking about the Vishnu Tattva side. So they're both there at once. It's not that there's a problem. Does that make sense?
Then at what point in time does the material Cupid take on the body?
At what point in time?
Yeah, because...
Well, like exact... It means down to what? You went down to what do you call it? What do you call it? The blinking of the eye?
Nimisha.
And you want it down to a Nimisha, or you're good with a, like a Muhurta, or, you know, okay, it means a day, a Paksha, or, you know, I mean, what kind of framework of time are we working on?
What I mean to say is, when Krishna, he wraps up his pastime, and then everybody goes away back to the spiritual world, so then...
Yeah, then so the then demigods go back, the Amsa that's merged into them just goes back to the heavenly planets.
Okay.
He looks like Prajumna. Is Cupid look like Prajumna?
Yeah, it's got to be pretty close, otherwise why is he so attractive?
No, interesting. When they merge and then they separate, they should be the same or they are different?
How about when Vamanadeva merges into Krishna, and then when they separate, then Vamanadeva's got bigger, or Krishna gets smaller?
<That's right>.
No, they just go back to their positions. Because you have to understand, these are all moods or potencies or like that, so they're all there in the original. So,
No?
Because if we, the analogy, our Atma, when we finally get rid of this body, then fortune can go to the spiritual world. So.
Yeah, but they're demigods. They're doing their demigod work, so they go back to there. And then after that, they'll go. Mm. So it's that when all the demigods took birth on the earth to part in the pastimes, then at the end of the pastimes, the eternal associates then went with Krishna, and the demigods all went back to the heavenly planets. So,
yeah. When they mention over here that the eternal associates, they appear with the Lord, and then they have the vibhutis, you know, mm-hmm. who are merged into the eternal associates.
Right.
So what is the benefit the vibhutis get, you know, by merging into the eternal associates?
They have to get a benefit. Mm-hmm. If there's no benefit, they're not. They say, no benefit, we're not merging. Right? You know? They say, yeah. Why do they need to get a benefit?
By their rights. Rights of the religious.
By being present in the past time and interacting with the Lord. Because merging is, you know, like...
Who?
Merging, you know, it is something such a... It's impersonal business.
See, is that... Is there only one application of merging, right? Because we're talking about, we have a word. And then this word has, it'll have various applications, but then it also, as we discussed, has various, what do you call it, vrittis of what it will bring out in you. So if just by bringing up the word merging, then just like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, then he had a problem with, you know, mukti pod. So the mukti, it would... So if that's the position, then that's, you know, that's okay. But here it just means they're all together. Why do we need to get so much into that detail as opposed to the pastime? You know, it's just like I say, you know, put that in your pocket, and then we get into, well, in the pocket, does it matter? You know, so that means like this. So does it have to face up like this, or can it also be like this? But then what happens if when it goes in my pocket, it goes like this? But then there's also the option that it could be like that. But then it could be this way, or it could be this way. You know, so, you know, and then what happens if it falls in the pocket, but there's something else there, so it ends up like that? You know, so would it be better it's like that, or it's like that? Or should we move that over here, and it should be like that? But then this side over here is like that. Does it have anything to do with it being in your pocket? It means you could go on like that, and we can analyze the different angles and all those things like that, and then what effects that has, and then how much, you know, how you say, different kinds of pressures are there, and whichever part of the rock and all that, and then accordingly, because, you know, in here there's a, you know, it's a slight by the, how you say, the when the rock appeared, then this has this natural fault in it, and so if it's too much of that angle, it'll put too much pressure here. Then would there be the you know, that after, you know, 4,793,000 years, the force of the effect might then crack the stone, and so then for you want to be very, very careful how it goes into the pocket, and then how do you put it in your pocket? Do you put it in your hand like this, or how many fingers do you use? Can you just use two fingers, or, you know, that would be the normal thing, but if you didn't want, say somebody just wanted to use another finger, would that be okay? Like that, or, you know, get like this, people might think it's weird, so then what would be the social repercussions of that? So then we might also have to study just how people are doing and why they wouldn't be accepting this social phenomena of that you can use any finger you like, you know, or I could put it in like this, or if I want to put it in like this, you know, it says, you know what I'm saying, you can get different, you know, or I could do that. What do they call it? I could do this one, right? You know, put it in my pocket. You know, so you got so many different things you can do. So, you know, what would be the social implications of all that? And, you know, is this something that we need to get into? Do we need to do a march? You know, should we march on Washington? If we're going to march on Washington, then would we want to do it, you know, what time of year we want to do it? Because now it's winter, it'll be really cold. But if we go in the summer, then there's that whole, you know, that kind of lake that's there, or that pond that's in front of the Washington Memorial Nepal and all that, then, you know, people can go swimming in there, so at least they can have a good time while we're on the march, because there's a good chance we won't be able to arrange food very nicely and all that, because there's so many people, and they're all, you know, everyone has a different diet and that these days, and so then it'll be really, really tough.
Hmm? You've never went that far.
You got it. Okay. Thank you. Yes. Srila Sukadev Goswami continued, the demon Shambhara, who could assume any form he desired, kidnapped the infant before he was even 10 days old, understanding Prajumna to be his enemy. Shambhara threw him into the sea and then returned home. Footnote 35. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, the demon took him and threw him directly into the sea. But as it is said, whoever is protected by Krishna, no one can kill. And whoever is destined to be killed by Krishna, no one can protect. Right? So can he throw the Chaturvyuha into the sea? No, but he can throw the demigod into the sea. Right? So that's what we're meaning. So these aspects of the pastimes, these are the pastimes of Prajumna's expansion as Kamadeva. But Kamadeva has taken shelter of Prajumna to get a body, because Shiva cursed him, he won't get a body. You know? So that means basically, you know, for some time he's not getting one.
How they decide who is acting Kamadeva for Prajumna? Chaturvyuha.
No, Chaturvyuha is Chaturvyuha.
But here, the demon throws him inside the sea.
Can you throw, has anybody be able to, can you throw Vishnu Tattva in the sea?
Never tried.
Never tried. Have you seen, so far in 10 cantos, have you seen anybody do it?
Oh, tried?
Yeah, but were they successful? No, so therefore it's just... That's your meaning, is so that you can understand which aspects are which. Because Prajumna is there, but, you know, the path, how he's taking part in the pastime is his Cupid. Right? Is this that? Because right? You don't hear much from that. It's just like Ram and Lakshman, you hear a lot of. Bhara Shatrughna, not a whole lot of. You know, so it's just, you know, so this is how they're taking part. Yes? Okay. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, Shambhara stole the infant before he was less than 10 days old. Vishnu Purana says he stole him on the 6th day after birth. Shambhara knew Kamadeva was his enemy because he learned from Narada that Kamadeva wanted to kill him. A powerful fish swallowed Prajumna, and this fish, along with others, was caught in a huge net and seized by fishermen. The fisherman presented that extraordinary fish to Shambhara, who had his cooks bring it to the kitchen, where they began cutting it up with a butcher knife. Footnote 36. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, demons and rakshasas are accustomed to eating meat, fish, and similar non-vegetarian foods. Demons like Ravana, Kamsa, Hiranyakashipu, although born of Brahmana and Kshatriya fathers, used to take meat and flesh without discrimination. This practice is still prevalent in India, and those who eat meat and fish are generally called demons and rakshasas. Seeing a male child in the belly of the fish, the cooks gave the infant to Mayavati, who was astonished. Narad Muni then appeared and explained to her everything about the child's birth and his entering the fish's abdomen. Mayavati was in fact Cupid's renowned wife, Rati. While waiting for her husband to attain a new body, his previous one having been burnt up, she had been assigned by Shambhara to prepare vegetables and rice. Mayavati understood that this infant was actually Kamadeva, and thus she began to feel love for him, the BBT purport states. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti explains the story as follows. When Cupid's body was burnt to ashes, Rati worshipped Lord Shiva to obtain another body for Cupid. Shambhara, having also come to Shiva for a benediction, was recognized by the Lord first, who told him, "You should now ask for your benediction." Shambhara, struck with lust at seeing Rati, replied that he wanted her as his benediction. And Shiva complied. Lord Shiva then consoled the sobbing Rati, telling her, "Go with him, and in his very home you will attain what you desire." Thereupon Rati bewildered Sambhar with her deluding power, and, taking the name Mayavati, remained in his house untouched. Right, because she has the power of Rati, means that he's Cupid, right? So the lust, but then Rati means attraction. So they go together. And so then she was able to bewilder him with her potency. And then, in this way, then she just stayed in the house. And then waiting for Prajumna. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. After a short time, the son of Krishna, Prajumna, attained his full youth. He enchanted all women who gazed upon him. "My dear king, with a bashful smile and raised eyebrows, Mayavati exhibited various gestures of conjugal attraction as she lovingly approached her husband, whose eyes were broad like the petals of a lotus, whose arms are very long, and who was the most beautiful of men." Lord Prajumna told her, "O mother, your attitude has changed. You are overstepping the proper feelings of a mother and behaving like a lover." Srila Jiva Goswami comments, "Though he was endowed with all powers like omniscience, Bhagavan, he spoke in an opposite manner since he was the son of Krishna, and thus performed attractive human pastimes in a similar manner." Prajumna thought of her as a mother. This is described in Harivamsa, quote, "Since Prajumna heard about it from his nurse, out of ignorance he thought of Mayavati to be his mother. He thought in this way because of the nurse, not because of Mayavati. The nurse told he was Mayavati's son." Because she never said that. She just took care of him. Right? But the nurse had said like that, you know, just so he would understand. The nurse told that he was Mayavati's son. Because of that information, he would have called her his mother. Therefore, he now became angry. "This attitude is different. You are acting in a different manner." Out of embarrassment, he did not say directly what it was. But then, in the second part of the verse, he describes the situation. "You are transgressing the feelings of a mother and acting like a lover. The real meaning is, because of your feelings, you should not act in any other way. Te matir anyata, since you are my beloved, Kamini. Your feelings surpass those of mother love. Matri bhava ati kramya vartase." Right, so just how they say, then they have all these other meanings that can be made. So it's setting the one because of the pastime, but at the same time, it's how it should be. Right? In other words, he's acting as if he doesn't know, but at the same time, he knows. Yes.
Can we say that his part is Kamadev doesn't know?
Yeah, but at the same time, is that Prajumna aspect is acting as a human anyway. No, because it's expansion of the same person. Does that make sense? It's like, let's say you have the high court judge, right, and he's at home. So the high court judge part is an expansion of he at home part. Right? But now there's something that needs to be done down at the court, but it's not actually his day to be at court. So then he may, while going somewhere with the family, drop in and do something as the family member. But he's doing that, so it appears that it's different, but it's not. Does that make sense? Rati said, "You are the son of Lord Narayana and were kidnapped from your parents' home by Shambhara. I, Rati, am your legitimate wife, O master, because you are Cupid." Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, "Considering him to be Kamadev, she said, 'I am your wife.' Prajumna made her, who was formerly the material wife of material Kamadev, his wife by touching her, just as a touchstone transforms objects by contact. However, she is actually his eternal Shakti, the mother of Aniruddha, according to the Vaishnava Toshani." Right, so she's also taking on that role. In other words, that would answer the question before, is that the aspect of, what do we say, Rukmavati, that's his wife. So then by this touch, and it would appear that now she takes on her position as Rukmavati, but the relationship will be that of Rati and Cupid. So you have Prajumna and Rukmavati then interacting as Kamadev and Rati. So now we're all sufficiently...
so much identity issues.
Why? Okay, it's just like this. Are you from Pune or are you eternal servant of Krishna?
Eternal servant of Krishna.
But you, after classes, you go to Pune.
No, I don't stay here. I'm staying here.
You're staying here. You never go to Pune.
Yeah, I go up
there. Now, why do you go to Pune?
My parents are really good.
Your parents are who is my? Who's the my of the my?
Okay, I got it.
Okay. Rati continued. That demon, Shambhara, threw you into the sea when you were not even 10 days old, and a fish swallowed you. Then in this very place we recovered you from the fish's abdomen. O Master, now kill this dreadful Shambhara, your formidable enemy. Right? So now she would be very much inclined to that, right? Because he goes there and asks boon from Shiva, and then sees her and goes, "I want her." That's not taken very well. That kind of stuff. Although he knows hundreds of magic spells, you can defeat him with bewildering magic and other techniques. Your poor mother, having lost her son, cries for you like a kurari bird. She is overwhelmed with love for a child, just like a cow that has lost its calf. Verses 16-24. Prajumna kills Shambharasura. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, speaking thus, Mayavati gave to the great soul Prajumna the mystic knowledge called Mahamaya, which vanquishes all other deluding spells. So he's got hundreds of spells, magic spells, but Mahamaya, that will vanquish all the other spells, because those are all Maya, but this is Mahamaya. So, Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, supernatural powers are generally known as Maya, and to surpass all such powers, there is another supernatural power called Mahamaya. Mayavati had the knowledge of the mystic power of Mahamaya, and she delivered it to Prajumna, the specific energetic power, in order to defeat the mystic powers of the Shambhara demon. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, Prajumna approached Shambhara and called him to battle, hurling intolerable insults at him to foment a conflict. Offended by these harsh words, Shambhara became as agitated as a kicked snake. He came out, club in hand, his eyes red with rage. Shambhara whirled his club swiftly about and then hurled it at the wise Prajumna, producing a sound as sharp as a thunder crack. As Shambhara's club came flying towards him, Lord Prajumna knocked it away with his own. Then, O king, Prajumna angrily threw his club at the enemy. Resorting to the black magic of the daityas taught to him by Maya Dhanava, Shambhara suddenly appeared in the sky and released a downpour of weapons upon Krishna's son. Srila Jiva Goswami remarks, he went into the sky to escape Prajumna's club. He showered down a profusion of iron rocks. When Prajumna turned the shower of trees into ashes, he showered down a host of rocks from the Harivamsa. The shower of rocks was actually illusory. Okay, so he showered down the trees, and then he burnt those to ashes. Then he turned all that into rocks, which weren't real. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, harassed by this rain of weapons, Lord Raukminyaya. Wow, never heard that name either. Raukminyaya. Yeah, but I'm just saying we never heard anybody with that name. The greatly powerful warrior made use of the mystic science called Mahamaya, which is created from the mode of goodness and which could defeat all other mystic power, because most mystic power is all from the mode of passional ignorance. But, it means you have, it's there in the Shastras and all that, but you have to
The yogis, when they eat mystic series, is there passion?
There has to be some touch of passion, otherwise why do they want it?
But mainly goodness?
It means you have to follow the process of goodness to get it. Mm. But you're wanting it, that would be passion. Because passion means that you're following the proper activities for a particular, for a material result.
Ignorance wouldn't be there.
In this case, I mean, there is the overall ignorance because they think they're the mystic yogi who's getting mystic powers. But the principle of goodness means you do the activity because you're supposed to. So are you supposed to do the mystic yoga system to get mystic powers? Yeah? That's the whole point of Ashtanga Yoga.
No, but that's part of it.
No, that just comes along on the side.
But this is the process you go through if you want that. So.
Yes, but the point is then you want that, so that has to have passion in it.
Yeah.
The process you may use is goodness, but the end result is yeah, just because, why? Because you're following the proper activity for a material result, so that's considered passion, right? So that's what's different. So goodness and passion basically would look the same because they would follow the same ritual, right? But the difference is goodness is you're doing it because that's your duty. Passion, you're doing it because you want the results. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. So if somebody's done his nice karmia, then it doesn't have that aspect. But this is done with you want the result. But the form will be the same. So whether it's sakam or nishkam, the activity is the same. Does that make sense? But ignorance means then you're not doing the right thing. Everything's upside down. Like that. The demon then unleashed hundreds of mystic weapons belonging to the Guhyakas, Gandharvas, Pisachas, Urugas, Uragas, and Rakshasas. But Lord Karshni, Prajumna, struck them all down, drawing his sharp-edged sword. Prajumna forcibly cut off Sambhara's head, complete with red mustache, helmet, and earrings. Verses 25-40. Prajumna returns to Dwarka. Srila Sukadev Goswami continued, as the residents of the higher planet showered Prajumna with flowers and chanted his praises, his wife appeared in the sky and transported him through the heavens back to the city of Dwarka. O King, Lord Prajumna and his wife resembled a cloud accompanied by lightning as they descended from the sky into the inner quarters of Krishna's most excellent palace, which were crowded with lovely women. Yeah, so they didn't bother walking in the door here. So it's just the women of the palace thought he was Lord Krishna when they saw his dark blue complexion, the color of a rain cloud, his yellow silk garments, his long arms and red-tinged eyes, his charming lotus face adorned with a pleasing smile, his fine ornaments and his thick, curly blue hair. Thus the women became bashful and hid themselves here and there. Because generally they're moving around freely, but when Krishna comes, then everything will be formal. So they're just, mingling around and milling around, and then Prajumna just happens to land there, and so now then they think it's Krishna, so then they... Gradually, from the slight differences between his appearance and Krishna's, the ladies realized he was not the Lord. Delighted and astonished, they approached Prajumna and his consort, who was a jewel among women. Srila Sanatana Goswami explains, he was slightly different since his color and other features of beauty were slightly less than Krishna's, since he, as a sun, was like a reflection, or he did not have the same loving glance. He glanced them with politeness, with bowed head, right? Because Krishna would deal with them differently. And so he's dealing differently. So then you can see difference there, right? Or it's also because being the sun, he's expansion, so there's something less is there. Like that. Gradually, since the two had similar form, they understood he was not Krishna because he did not immediately manifest bhava for the wives. Right, because they would have that natural thing, but it didn't. So then it must be something else. Or they could not immediately realize the difference by intelligence because of their natural affection and shyness. Right, so they just see, so they naturally have that affection. But as they notice, they see, no, there's a difference because the same mood's not there. Then they approached with great joy because of arousal of parental affection or seeing similarity to Krishna's form. They were astonished since he arrived suddenly and had similarity to their husband. They did not know that the woman was his wife. Thus, she is called a stri, jewel among women. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, seeing Prajumna, sweet-voiced, dark-eyed, Rukmini remembered her lost son, and her breast became moist out of affection. Srila Sanatana Goswami explains, while the women were looking at him after he arrived, Rukmini, who possessed beautiful glances and spoke in the most pleasing manner, remembered her son because of the similarity of form. The word swa indicates her extreme affection for him. Though a long time had passed since he was born, milk still flowed from her breasts. Though the milk flowed on remembering her son, the two events happened simultaneously. Thus it is said that the milk flowed and she remembered her son. This indicates a great affection. So there are two different things, but they happen simultaneously. So the one is said and the other is said. Because actually it does match, but she doesn't know it at this time. Srimati Rukmini Devi said, who is this lotus-eyed jewel among men? What man's son is he, and what woman carried him in her womb? And who is this woman he has taken as his wife? If my lost son, who was kidnapped from the maternity room, were still alive somewhere, he would be of the same age and appearance as this young man. But how is it that this young man so much resembles my own lord, Krishna, the wielder of Sharanga, in his bodily form and his limbs, in his gait and the tone of his voice, and in his smiling glance? Yes, he must be the same child I bore in my womb, since I feel great affection for him and my left arm is quivering. As Queen Rukmini conjectured in this way, Lord Krishna, the son of Devaki, arrived on the sun with on the scene with Vasudeva and Devaki. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, Krishna came with Vasudeva and Devaki because he had come from their house. He is called Uttama Shloka because he is praised for driving away ignorance. He arrived to drive away Rukmini's ignorance on this matter. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, although Lord Janardhan knew perfectly well what had transpired, he remained silent. The sage Narada, however, explained everything, beginning with Shambhara's kidnapping of the child. Srila Sanatana Goswami explains, though knowing the truth about this in detail by direct perception, because he is Bhagavan, past tense is used, he knew, though it was happening at present, because he was recollecting previous events or ascertaining the events. He also gives pain to the demons. He arranged for the killing of Shambhara. He was silent to indicate he did not know anything. Rukmini had lamented and would think badly of him if he had known everything without telling her. Yeah, that's not going to be good. That's not going to work. Yeah. Though it is not mentioned that Narada has arrived, he had come through the air at that time, being omniscient and dear to Krishna. Or it can be explained that he was continuously with Krishna. Right, so either he was with Krishna and came at that time, or knowing this was all going on and understanding because of his omniscience, he came at that time.
Go. Rukmini didn't want Krishna to find her lost child?
Appears not.
Then he could have told her that he knew.
I say, the Lord has his method how he reveals different things, how he interacts and all these things. Right? So that works?
Yeah. Okay.
Govinda Bhuja Goptayam Dvara Dvara Vatyam Kuru Dvaha Avatsin Narado Bhikshnam Krishna Pashana Lalasaha. O best of the Kurus, eager to engage in the worship of Krishna, Narad Muni stayed constantly in Dwarka, which was always protected by the arms of Govinda. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:2-1. Narada explained how Shambhara had taken the child, thrown him in the ocean, how the demon was killed, and also revealed the identity of Mayavati. Right? So they're going to look at him as Cupid. They're going to see her as, you know, Rati. So that's how it's going to be seen. So, right?
So the new marriage takes place for them. They're considered married because they're Cupid and Rati.
That I don't know. We'll see if they did a marriage or not. I mean, technically they don't have to, but at the same time, it's not that it doesn't have, like when Sati came as, what is it?
Himavati.
Yeah, then they had a marriage, even though it's the same person. So they could do, they could not do, it's up to them, whatever they like. What's that term they use? Reaffirming their vows. Yes. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, when the women of Lord Krishna's palace heard this most amazing account, they joyfully greeted Prajumna, who had been lost for many years, but who had now returned as if from the dead. Devaki, Vasudev, Krishna, Balaram, and all the women of the palace, especially Queen Rukmini, embraced the young couple and rejoiced. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, Devaki is... on one sense, we'll see if they have, but otherwise there's no need, because the marriage ceremony is for the purification of the girl. And so she's still the same wife. So. You know, it's like, Shravana. Right? He was old and wrinkly and all that and blind. And then when the Ashwini Kumaras, they dipped him in the water with them and came out, then he looked like them. So he didn't have another marriage ceremony. Okay. Srila Jiva Goswami comments. Devaki is mentioned first since she had most affection as the paternal grandmother. Balaram is mentioned last since he arrived last. The queens with Rukmini are mentioned at the end because they remained behind in order to embrace him for a long time, or they arrived late because of attachment, which made them helpless from their great affection. Or the women desired to please the couple in front of all others. Right, so they were either taking care of the others or because of their attachment, then they somehow or another didn't come forward at that time. So they're bringing out the different moods that are there. Srila Sukadeva Goswami concluded, hearing that lost Prajumna had now come home, the residents of Dwarka declared, "Ah, Providence has allowed this child to return as if from death. It is not astonishing that the palace women, who should have felt maternal affection for Prajumna, privately felt ecstatic attraction for him as if he were their own lord. After all, the son exactly resembled his father. Indeed, Prajumna was a perfect reflection of the beauty of Lord Krishna, the shelter of the goddess of fortune, and appeared before their eyes as Cupid himself. Since even those on the level of his mother felt conjugal attraction for him, and what to speak of how other women felt when they saw him. Right? Because he's the reflection of the beauty of Lord Krishna. Because that's the attractive element. That's Cupid. So that's what Prajumna manifests. Is that aspect, that's the prominence. Does that make sense? The pleasingness of him, you know, his mood and all that, that's what Aniruddha manifests. You know, the knowledge, the, you know, all these things, the authority and all that, that's what Shankarshan manifests. Does that make sense? Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Srila Sukadeva Goswami has explained that in the beginning, all the ladies of the palace, who were all mothers and stepmothers of Prajumna, mistook him to be Krishna and were all bashful, infected by the desire for conjugal love. The explanation is that Prajumna's personal appearance was exactly like Krishna's, and he was factually Cupid himself. There was no cause for astonishment, therefore, when the mothers of Prajumna and the other women mistook him in that way. It is clear from this statement that Prajumna's bodily characteristics were so similar to Krishna's that he was mistaken for Krishna even by his mother. Srila Sanatana Goswami concludes, The mothers felt love for him constantly, though repeatedly they extinguished such feelings with doubts because of his similarity to their husband. Previously in verse 29, it was mentioned they were ashamed and hid. This indicates that they were ashamed of this feeling. That's why it mentioned they came later before because of that thing. They became absorbed in seeing the reflection of Krishna. Prajumna. But their chastity was not broken, for they still considered him the son of Krishna, and that Krishna was the shelter of Lakshmi. This shows their greatness. By his similarity, their bhava for the Lord arose. Right? So this would come up, but that would remind them of Krishna. So everything, that would all be transferred to Krishna, and they would see him in his position. So it's by seeing him, because he looks so much like Krishna, these feelings would come up, but immediately they'd be transferred to Krishna, and then, does that make sense? So it never disturbed.
He's acting like
Deepan. Or the women took Prajumna's Cupid, but without desire. Or through, because they're all transcendental, so why would they be attracted by Cupid in that aspect? They saw him similar to Krishna's form, Bimbe Bimbe, having desire, Kame, without considering good or bad. They had love for their Lord, his father. Right, so that comes up, so they just would, that would just go into Krishna. Or, though he was the object of desire for others' eyes, because of having a bhava for Krishna, they did not develop conjugal love for him. That is not surprising at all, for they were his mothers, and other women also did not develop such love. That is not surprising also, since they were friends of the mothers. Right, that's why he said mothers and stepmothers. Right, because then anyone who's friend of the mother, they'll see the child as like their child. So in that way, then they're like stepmothers. So, yeah. Conclusion: whoever is protected by Krishna, no one can kill, and whoever is destined to be killed by Krishna, no one can protect. Right, so that's it. Because he came, he tried to kill him. He can't be protected. I mean, he is protected. Right, even though he's swallowed by a fish, then the fish is caught, and he's taken this, that, you know. So many difficulties could have come up in there, right? I'm just thinking, you didn't ask, well, how did he live inside the belly of the fish? When they were cutting the belly of this, did they cut him with a knife? Did they, you know what I'm saying? You understand that question? That's the other question. So, yeah. So that's the point. God. Okay, so we see he's already married to all these other princesses, because there's so many ladies there, so many who would be mothers and like this. So that's why then it's mentioned that this point of there, but for continuity, because he got stolen, kidnapped, and then thrown into the ocean. Right? Then Krishna marries all the other queens, and then after that, then this whole pastime happens. But for continuity of the story, it's just told as one thing. And so having told that, then after the birth of Prajumna, then he married the other princesses. Right? He just happened to tell a story that comes later at that time. So, yeah. So there's simultaneously continuity and not. Thank you. Okay, so chapters 56 to 63. So 56, the shaman took a jewel. 57, Satrajit murdered, the jewel returned. 58, Krishna marries five princesses. 59, the killing of Narakasura. 60, Lord Krishna teases Queen Rukmini. 61, Lord Balaram slays Rukmi. 62, the meeting of Usha and Aniruddha. 63, Lord Krishna fights with Banasura. So 56, the Shamantaka jewel, Pratigya. One can understand Krishna by devotional service. Chapter 56 summarizes questions and answers. Maharaj Parikit asks Srila Sukadev Goswami question 10.28 of Srimad Bhagavatam. From 10.56 to, O Brahmana, what did King Satrajit do to offend Lord Krishna? Where did he get the Shamataka jewel, and why did he give his daughter to the Supreme Lord? Srila Sukadev Goswami answers the question throughout the rest of the chapter. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes how Lord Krishna recovered the Shamantaka jewel to allay false accusations against him and married the daughters of Jambavan and Satrajit. By enacting the pastime involving the Shamantaka jewel, the Lord demonstrated the futility of material wealth. And so there's a purpose in this. Because of the material wealth, then so much problem comes up. We're all worried about material wealth. Less problems, right? We perform our duties, whatever comes, that's fine. But if we're worried about it, it's just anxiety. When Sukadeva Goswami mentioned that King Satrajit offended Lord Krishna on account of the Shamantaka jewel, King Parikit became curious to hear the details of this incident. Thus Sukadeva Goswami narrated the story. King Satrajit received the Shamantaka gem by the grace of his best well-wisher, the sun god, Surya. After fastening the gem to a chain, which he then hung around his neck, Satyajit traveled to Dwarka. The residents, thinking he was the sun god himself, went to Krishna and told him that Lord Surya had come to take his audience. But Krishna replied that the man who had come was not Surya, but King Satrajit, who looked extremely effulgent because he was wearing the Shamantaka jewel. In Dwarka, Satrajit installed the precious stone on a special altar in his home. Every day the gem produced a large quantity of gold, and it had the additional power of assuring that wherever it was properly worshipped, no calamity would occur. On one occasion, Lord Krishna requested Satrajit to give the gem to the king of the Yadus, Ugrasena, but Satrajit refused. Obsessed as he was with greed. So that's the problem. You get something so nice and then you get greedy. Like, you know, he's had it for so many days. Every day he's produced a huge quantity of gold. Technically he has enough gold. But, you know, but he wants more. Shortly thereafter, Satrajit's brother, Prasena, left the city to hunt on horseback, wearing the Shamantaka jewel on his neck. On the road, a lion killed Prasena and took the jewel away to a mountain cave, where the king of the bears, Jambavan, happened to be living. Jambavan killed the lion and gave the jewel to his son to play with. So, he doesn't care. Right? When King Satrajit's brother did not return, the king presumed that Sri Krishna had killed him for the Shamantaka gem. Lord Krishna heard about this rumor circulating amongst the general populace. And to clear his name, he went with some of the citizens to find Prasena, right? So he went with some citizens, because if he goes alone, they could say anything. But he goes with others, then they can also confirm. Following his path, they eventually found his body and that of his horse lying on the road. Further on, they saw the body of the lion Jambavan had killed. Lord Krishna told the citizens to remain outside the cave while he went in to investigate. The Lord entered Jambavan's cave and saw the Shamantaka jewel lying next to a child. But when Krishna tried to take the jewel, the child's nurse cried out in alarm, bringing Jambavan quickly to the scene. Jambavan, considering Krishna an ordinary man, and began fighting with him. For 28 days, continuously, the two fought, until finally Jambavan grew weak from the Lord's blows. Now understanding that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Jambavan began to praise him. The Lord touched Jambavan with his lotus hand, dispelling his fear, and then explained everything about the jewel. With great devotion, Jambavan gladly presented the Shamataka jewel to the Lord, together with his unmarried daughter, Jambavati. Meanwhile, Lord Krishna's companions, having waited 12 days for Krishna to come out of the cave, returned to Dwarka despondent. All of Krishna's friends and family members became extremely sorrowful and began regularly worshipping Goddess Durga to assure the Lord's safe return. Even as they performed this worship, Lord Krishna entered the city in the company of his new wife. He summoned Satrajit to the royal assembly, and after recounting to him the entire story of the Shamataka jewel's recovery, gave the jewel back to him. Satrajit accepted the jewel, but with great shame and remorse. He went back to his home, and there he decided to offer Lord Krishna not only the jewel, but also his daughter, so as to atone for the offense he had committed against the Lord's lotus feet. Sri Krishna accepted the hand of Satrajit's daughter, Satyabhama, who was endowed with all divine qualities, but the jewel he refused, returning it to King Satrajit. Shloka Anusharana. Summary of verses 1-18. Satrajit offends Krishna. Excessive material attachment leads to absorption of materialistic activities and then direct offenses to the Lord, right? So that's what we can gain from this section, right? 9-30. The combat between Krishna and Jambavan. Jambavan understood the position of Krishna only after pleasing him by service, right? So you can't know the Lord without service. So Jambavan saw Krishna, he couldn't understand who he was. But because we're fighting with him, then rendering that service, right? Because the Lord likes to fight. Who can fight? Jambavan is extremely strong. There's very few people that can fight with the Lord. So then, just like Jai and Vijay, then it's pleasing to the Lord. Then he revealed who he was. Verses 31-37. Krishna recovers the Shamataka jewels and marries Jambavati. 38-45. Satrajit offers his daughter, Satyabhama, to Krishna.
Side question.
Jambavan
is a bear and Jambavati.
Okay. A very good looking bear. Cuddly bear, yeah. I mean, it's just like that when you go to the airport and there's this big monster, you know, teddy bears, you know. So. No, she'll look like a regular girl. Verses 1-18, Satrajit offends Krishna. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, having offended Lord Krishna, Satrajit tried the best he could to atone by presenting him with his daughter and the Shamataka jewel. Maharaj Parikit inquired, O Brahmana, what did King Satrajit do to offend Lord Krishna? Where did he get the Shamataka jewel? And why did he give his daughter to the Supreme Lord? Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, Surya, the sun god, felt great affection for his devotee, Satrajit. Acting as his greatest friend, the demigod gave him the jewel called Shamataka as a token of his satisfaction. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, friend means that he continuously worshipped Surya. Friend means that he continuously worshipped Surya, was always favorable to Surya. Because of special worship, he was dear to Surya. Harivamsa describes how the gem was given. Quote, when Satyajit arrived at the sun planet, Vivaspan shining bright so that his form could not be clearly, could not be seen clearly, no? Probably because B and seen became merged into being. Okay. That his form could not be seen clearly stood before him. The king spoke to Vivasvan, who was in front of him. O Lord of Light, just as I see you in the sky, I now see you shining brightly in front of me. Having attained your friendship by worship, what is the difference between you and me? Hearing this, Vivasvan took from his neck the Shamataka jewel and placed it in a separate place. Then Satrajit was able to see the form of the sun god. With affection, he spoke to the sun god for some time. Satrajit surrendered to him and spoke, you should give me the gem by which you illuminate the planets. Then the sun god gave him the Shamataka jewel. In his ignorance, Satyajit thought that the gem lit up the planets. Right? No, it's just, it's very effulgent, but it's not that it lights the planets. No, it's the potency of the Lord. Then that's what the sun god has that lights up the planets. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, wearing the jewel on his neck, Satyajit entered Dwarka. He shone as brightly as the sun himself, O king, and thus he went unrecognized because of the jewel's effulgence. As the people looked at Satyajit from a distance, his brilliance blinded them. They presumed he was the sun god, Surya, and went to tell Lord Krishna, who was at that time playing at dice. The residents of Dwarka said, obeisances unto you, O Narayana, O holder of the conch, disc, and club, O lotus-eyed Damodar, O Govinda, O cherished descendant of Yadu. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Narayana, as accepted by the citizens of Dwarka, was later confirmed by the great Mayavadi philosophical leader Shankaracharya. By accepting the Lord as impersonal, he did not reject the Lord's personal form. Everything which has form in this material world is subject to creation, maintenance, and annihilation. But because the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, does not have a material form subject to these limitations, Shankaracharya, to convince the less intelligent men who take Krishna to be an ordinary human being, said that God is impersonal. This impersonality means that he is not a person of this material condition. He is a transcendental personality without a material body. So there's no contradiction, because you could say, well, why would Shankaracharya said this? Because this person was, people are making the mistake of thinking that how, because Krishna comes and performs human pastimes, that he's human. So then he presented, no, he's not material. Right? So he has no material qualities. So then they're taking just that Brahman aspect. But it's not that he's not himself referring to the personal aspect. Because the point is all three features have no material qualities. But because they're less intelligent, they can only see up to that much. Because only if you're a devotee, you can see beyond. So Shankaracharya himself, being Lord Shiva, is a devotee. But his followers are not. The citizens of Dwarka addressed Lord Krishna not only as Damodar, but also as Govinda, which indicates that Krishna is very affectionate to the cows and calves. And just to refer to their intimate connection with Krishna, they addressed him as Yadunandana, because he was born the son of Vasudeva in the Yadu dynasty. The citizens of Dwarka concluded by addressing Krishna as the supreme master of the whole universe. They addressed Krishna in many different ways, proud of being citizens of Dwarka, who could see Krishna daily. The residents of Dwarka continued, Lord Savita has come to see you, O Lord of the universe. He is blinding everyone's eyes with his intensely effulgent rays. Srila Sanatana Goswami remarks, the residents of Dwarka said, the sun god desires to see you, Krishna replied, but he cannot give up his job of lighting up the world and come here. The residents of Dwarka said, O Lord of the universe, you protect the universe by your light. What use is he? Or his main goal is to see his master. Or only by the mercy of the master, his desires will be fulfilled. Thus he desires to see you. Krishna replied, but he is not the sun god. The resident of Dwarka said, he dazzles our eyes because his rays are intense. The residents of Dwarka continued, the most exalted demigods in the three worlds are certainly anxious to see you out. O Lord, now that you have hidden yourself among the Yadu dynasty, thus the unborn sun god has come to see you here. Or seek you out. Okay, that makes more sense. So it's see you out. What does that mean? See him come outside. See him. Okay, are certainly anxious to seek you out because he has hidden himself in the Yadu dynasty. So they come to see him. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, hearing these innocent words, these were the words of children, Balavachanam. The other inhabitants of Dwarka could not have such ignorance, Srila Sanatana Goswami. The lotus-eyed Lord smiled broadly and said, this is not the sun god, Ravi, but rather Satyajit, who is glowing because of his jewel. King Satrajit entered his opulent home, festively executing auspicious rituals. He had qualified Brahmins install the Shamataka jewel in the house's temple room. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. Satrajit, however, did not come to see Krishna. He was instead overwhelmed by the Shamataka jewel. He installed the jewel in a temple to be worshipped by Brahmins. He engaged for this purpose. This is an example of a less intelligent person worshipping a material thing. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that less intelligent persons, in order to get immediate results from the fruit of activities, worship the demigods created within this universe. The word materialistic means one concerned with gratification of the senses within the material world. Right? So if the conscience adjusts, then you'd be like that. And you adjust the other way, then you could be Krishna conscious. But the point is when one's material, then that aspect is being brought out here. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, each day the gem would produce 8 bharas of gold, my dear Prabhu, and the place in which it was kept and properly worshipped would be free of calamities such as famine or untimely death, and also of evils like snake bites, mental and physical disorders, and the presence of deceitful persons. On one occasion, Lord Krishna requested Satrajit to give the jewel to the Yadu king, Ugrasena, but Satrajit was so greedy that he refused. He gave no thought to the seriousness of the offense he had committed by denying the Lord's request. Because the Lord asked him directly. He had it for some time. He left it there. I'm not sure how much is a bara, but it's a lot. Anyone knows how much a bara is? Because in the Krishna book...
It explains later.
Okay, Krishna says. Okay, well, here's 170 pounds of gold. So that's would be like... what do you call it? Yeah, like 75 kilos of gold or something. Like 75 kilos of gold a day. Right, so just one day he's set, and it's there for a long time. So he's good. So then Krishna says, now you should give it to the king. Because the king will use it for the benefit of the whole kingdom. Satrajit will, you know, for himself, he'll do nice things with it, of course, but not as much as the king. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Lord Krishna wanted to teach the world that the best of everything should be offered to the ruling chief of the country. King Ugrasena was the overlord of many dynasties and happened to be the grandfather of Krishna. So Krishna asked Satrajit to present the Shamataka jewel to King Ugrasena. Looks like time's up. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prema.